winter's day. Pull up a bar stool in our underground outlaw saloon. Wet your whistle and don't mind the smoke. Two old codgers are thinking about shooting holes in your mind. Now you might not think you know. You might think you know what's real and unreal, but we're gonna shoot some holes in that kind of thinking. Howdy, I'm Shorty Dawkins, writer and freedom outlaw, and I'm sitting here with Elias Alias from the Mental Militia. Elias Alias is a freedom outlaw, a wild-eyed artist, and an unemployed poet. So, Elias, tonight we're going to talk about the freedom outlaw's mindset. What do you think about that?
I gotta kind of know whether or not I'm supposed to use my mind to think about a mindset. You know?
That's a good point.
Well, yeah. But we have to get past a little barrier like that. I think freedom and outlawry and mentality are all tied together. What do you think?
I definitely agree.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, though, Shorty. I'm going to have another scotch and water. Barkeep, can you do us a scotch and water? And Shorty, what would you like, man?
I'd like a brown ale.
All right, no problem.
Thank you, ma'am. Yeah. Shorty, how would we define freedom outlawry? It's like, we ain't criminals.
We're staying outside of the criminal laws foisted on us by a criminal government.
So we're being outside the law because, in a lot of cases today, the law is criminal.
Precisely. And then the only moral thing you can do at that point is to stay outside the law.
Yeah, like I'm hip to that, man. You know something Thoreau said a long time ago? In unjust times, the place for all just men is in prison.
Well, that's a very good point, but I don't think we need to be in prison. We just need to be outside the law.
Yeah, prison was different in Thoreau's day, I'm sure. You can't be very productive in there these days from what I hear. So, at any rate, if the government, which creates the laws and then enforces the laws, if the government is acting outside its own law, then it's criminal. And what we are finding in society today, even in our good old Montana underground saloon bar culture, we're finding that everybody's feeling the presence of Big Brother. We're finding that our freedoms are under assault. We're finding that our privacy is dissipating. We're finding that our rights to own property. You know, there's somebody, group of little statists moved into Montana a few years ago, voted into law in the state of Montana that the state can prohibit me and you from owning this bar, as bar owners, we can't let our customers smoke in here.
Isn't that ridiculous? Shouldn't it be up to the bar owner to decide that?
The bar owner and his customer traffic. That's your free market, laissez-faire, capitalist system at work. People who don't like to smoke, we're out. They go drink somewhere that doesn't allow smoking. People that want to smoke, we're out. They get to do it their way. You know, it's freedom of choice. But the point is, the bartender, the owners of the bar, it's their property. By the state intruding into their property like that, telling them what they can and can't do inside their own business, then at that point the state is acting unlawfully. And that's why constitutional studies is good for all freedom outlaws. You have to know what the law is all about before you know whether you should keep the law or step outside the law. But, Shorty, there's two different kinds of law here in criminal codes. You've got, what do they call it, malum in se crimes. That's a crime that has a victim, where somebody does some damage to somebody else or somebody else's property. It's bad in and of itself. And that's the kind of law we want on our books. That protects everybody. But then there's this malum prohibitum, which is just a law that says you can't do something because I said so, signed Uncle Sam. You see what I mean? Those kind of laws, there's no victim, like somebody smoking marijuana. Is he hurting anybody's property or himself or anybody else? But there's people that say, yeah, he's hurting himself, but there's a lot of other living examples that say that's not true. We know lots and lots of people who've smoking pot for 40 years have led good, productive, profitable lives with moral upstanding, raised good kids, been contributing members of society and their communities, and have been happy and relatively pain-free from all the various things that do afflict our human bodies, right?
The big thing to me is the... Where do they feel that they get the right to tell us how we can live our lives? How don't we have the rights, the obligation to look after ourselves as we see fit? We should be making our own choices on that matter. If I want to sit down and eat 27 Big Macs, I should be fine. And in fact, that is still legal. If I want to smoke dope, or if I want to have a few beers, or if I want to pop aspirins, it's nobody's business but my own. I should have the right to own my body as well as own my mind.
Well, Shorty, I'm glad to see you think that way, man. You've been in the mental militia yourself for a number of years. I appreciate you being in there. You know, man, it's got to do with going back to the law. And it takes, unfortunately today, a freedom outlaw to remind the mainstream society to force our government to get back inside the law. The 9th and 10th Amendment justify and back up everything you just said. It's to the states or to the people as the source of the ultimate legitimate authority. And the people extend, they gave out of a portion of their freedom, their autonomy, their sovereignty. Each person gives a little bit of that of himself to form the energy pool that becomes the government through a document that was signed by all the sovereign nation state republics in the compact. So you're correct in what you were saying. You should have the right. And that's why freedom outlaws, once again, like hanging out with the mental militia. Because you have a mindset when you're trying to set up a chain of command in your inner self, you get to questions like, what is a thought? Who am I? What am I? Am I my thought? Or am I the observer of my thought? Are the two of those the same thing? Are the two halves of the same thing? Are they separate things or what? But we do all admit we have thought activity in what we call our minds, which are invisible. But we all presume we've got one. And each of us, to be free, has to have control and ownership of one's mind, just the same as with one's body. The government has no authority, no legitimate authority, to regulate or control what you put in your body or don't put in your body. They can't make you, they can't lawfully make you take a vaccine, like those poor girls down in Texas. They just destroyed some lives down there over forced vaccination. They can't make you do that legitimately. They're outside their law. They're being criminal. The government is being criminal at that point. So the same thing applies to our minds. The battle, the war for liberty in America today is in the mind. There's a vast array, an infrastructure, an undergirding, undergirding power structure and authority dispersion from Homeland Security to all the countless private sector contractors that are doing secret work for Homeland Security, for Air Force Intelligence, for CIA, for NSA, NSC, NRO, all of those groups, all the government groups. It's all arrayed against us, and they, through the CFR, who manages the business on Wall Street that feeds the Industrial Revolution aftermath called the military-industrial complex, that is being fed and directed through the CFR the same way CFR directs the public mass media, so that a government proclamation becomes the tone and spin of the day in terms of what this means for the American public mind. It's all a mind war. They're doing psyops now. We've just revealed that at Oath Keepers, on the front page of Oath Keepers National. It's a mind war, and the battle lines are drawn. And so Freedom Outlaw has to be concerned about ownership of his body, ownership of his mind.
Now, we need to be responsible for the contents of our mind.
That's exactly it. Well spoken. Can you see if the barkeep can get us another round there, Shorty? I think my little shot glass is run dry.
You said the scotch and brown ale?
Brown ale.
Thank you.
I got you.
She's such a good barkeep, maybe. While we're waiting on her to pour us up another, let me read you a little passage, Shorty. Unless the human mind is inwardly, psychologically, totally free, it is not possible to see what is true, to see if there is a reality not invented by fear, not shaped by the society or the culture in which we live, and which is not an escape from the daily monotony, with its boredom, loneliness, despair, anxiety. To find out if there is actually such freedom, freedom to see that, to find out if there's actually such freedom, one must be aware of one's own conditioning, of the problems of the monotonous shallowness, emptiness, insufficiency in our daily lives, and above all, one must be aware of fear. One must be aware of oneself, neither introspectively nor analytically, but actually be aware of oneself as one is and see it. If it is at all possible to be entirely free of all those issues that seem to clog the mind, to explore this, there must be freedom, not at the end of the process, But right at the beginning, we have to start with freedom. Unless one is free, one cannot explore, investigate, or examine. To look deeply, there needs to be not only freedom, but the discipline that is necessary to observe. Freedom and discipline go together. Not that one must be disciplined in order to be free. I'm using the word discipline, not in the accepted traditional sense, which is to conform, or to imitate, or to suppress, to follow a set pattern, but rather at the root meaning of that word, which is to learn. Learning and freedom go together. Freedom bringing its own discipline, not a discipline imposed by the mind in order to achieve a certain result. These two things are essential, freedom and the act of learning. One cannot learn about oneself unless one is free, free so that one can observe and according to any pattern, formula, or concept, but actually to observe oneself as one is. That observation, that perception, that seeing brings about its own discipline and learning in that there is no conformity. There's no imitation, no suppression or control whatsoever. And in that, there is great beauty. So our minds are conditioned. That's an obvious fact. Conditioned by a particular culture or society, influenced by various impressions, by the strains and stresses of relationships, economic and climactic, educational factors, by religious conformity, and so on forever. Our minds are trained to accept fear and to escape, if we can, from that fear, never being able to resolve totally and completely the whole nature and structure of fear. So our first question is, can the mind, so heavily burdened, resolve completely not only its conditioning, but also its fears? Because it is fear that makes us accept the conditioning. Wow, that's pretty heavy.
That is heavy stuff, and it's fantastic stuff.
Well, that was Jiddu Krishnamurti in a little book called The Flight of the Eagle. Very interesting guy he was, yeah.
Yeah, he has an interesting history.
Yeah, we should have a visit about him sometime over some drinks. What a fascinating story behind that guy, Jiddu Krishnamurti. I first met him in books in the early 70s. In fact, I first discovered him at Crestline, California, up on California 18, down below Big Bear and Arrowhead. That's where I first met Mr. Krishnamurti. Interesting guy. So what's that got to do with the freedom outlaw mindset?
Well, I picked up on one particular thing that he was saying, and that is that you need the freedom to explore. The ability to explore your world, anything you want to focus on, any conversation you have, whatever, needs to, and if you are to be free, to come from an open mind, not from a closed mind. Closed mind is a belief mind, which automatically excludes certain things that you would otherwise see if you had an open mind.
I'll drink to that, shorty. Clink, clink. Yeah, you know, I know I'm chain smoking and all that, but cigarette smoking bothered you, right?
No, I'm going to have a smoke myself.
All right. Damn the government. I think it's good to feel free for a minute. If we don't get caught, we're doing good, but we never let them catch the Midnight Rider, right?
Oh, not as long as we have one more silver dollar.
Well, we got one of those. We're good to go. Add some wooden nickels from some of the saloons around the valley here, too. I mean, we're cooking, man. So you're talking about closed-mindedness versus open-mindedness. And I would like to talk about what does belief do in the mind? So let me paint you an abstract little symbol for a moment, just between us sitting here at the saloon, you know. Let's say that a human mind is a nebulous, gelatinous, invisible, weightless, insensible, metaphysical cloud hovering around a centralized point either in our hearts or our heads or both or our physical body. And that mind is kind of nebulous. It can, you know, it can pulse or it can kind of move in and out of certain different parts around its periphery. And it's a big round orb of consciousness. Conscious ooze, whatever the heck it is. And it's constantly being paraded through by a whole incessant string of thought material. All kinds of thought material. Same time, subconsciously, that mind is also being bombarded with the sensory perceptions our conscious filters don't pull out of all the input that's being dragged in from the universe around us by our five physical senses. You know, we see only so many frames per second on a movie screen, you know. Your subconscious is seeing all of those screens that you don't see consciously. And it's, remember when they figured that out, they'd already figured that out when Aldous Huxley wrote his book, what's the name of that thing, Brave New World Revisited. I think he did that along about the end of the 50s, early 60s. But Brave New World Revisited, he went into that. This subliminal programming, they were inserting pictures of celebrities eating popcorn, a frame in a movie theater. And they found that by doing that, the conscious mind of the audience out there watching the movie never picked it up, but the subconscious mind did, and our popcorn sales at intermission time would skyrocket. So they started learning about, you know, how you manipulate human mentality, how you manipulate the mind, the mass mind. And of course, you know, we've gone through Bernays and his concept of the group mind and its differences than an individual mind. So in the middle of all that, we have to realize that as we sit here and observe the content of our minds, trying to begin the process to reclaim ownership of our minds, get all the programming from the media out of our heads, all of what our culture has taught us, what society taught us, and everything else, and just stand up, breathe fresh air, and look around with open eyes, with no preconception about what we're really seeing out there, and start to rebuild our own mental infrastructure by regulating which thoughts we entertain in our mind and which thoughts we dismiss from our minds as soon as we see them, such as fear thoughts. What we want to embrace is love thoughts, and we want to get rid of the fear thoughts because those are known to interdict your success in meeting your proper fate as a person and a soul on the earth. So, not to get us way out there and get us lost or anything, but the responsibility to monitor the content of one's mind is one's own responsibility. The Constitution of the United States, the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights lay this all out, and the government is not to tamper with that. That's clear American history. The government is not authorized to tamper with any of that. That's our unalienable rights. They're spelled out. Some of them are spelled out and enumerated, listed. We have certain autonomy and sovereignty recognized by the founders who wrote the Constitution. Consequently, we have the moral obligation to oppose a corrupt practice. Okay? We have that obligation because we see it. We see the error in the government's intrusion into the sanctity of human life. It would teach us how to behave, what we can and cannot do in our homes, in our properties, in our own businesses, on our good earth, in our country. We are being told, well, an ever-expanding list of things thou shalt not do by Big Brother government that has no legitimate authority to be telling us those things. They don't have any authority to even be involved in that. Article 1, Section 8 lists what the government can do. And if it can't find its authority in that list of things to do, and the 9th and 10th Amendments flat out just show that those things are reserved to the states or to the people who own the states. That's me and you and everybody.
And so, I might point out that an awful lot, like public schooling, is a prime example of a duality whereby, number one, they're taking away our rights by saying we must go compulsory schooling. We must have compulsory education. And at the same time, they are also using that compulsory education to manipulate minds.
Well, according to the NEA's own documents, you're totally correct. They have published their intent to subvert the development of the individuation in students in order to instill a humanist program based on a cocktail of three vital elements: Marxism, Darwinism, and oh my goodness. I must need another drink, sorry.
Another round here.
Thanks. Okay. You had Darwin. You had, oh, how could I forget this guy? You had Freud.
Oh, yes.
Darwin, Freud, and Marx. Those three took over Wall Street.
Here you go, sir. You deserve a drink for that.
Oh, a free round. All right. Yeah. All right. Well, sorry about that. Sorry about that little mind blip there. I was aware that I was doing it when I did it, in case anybody wants to know. Part of my gig, you know, what I keep in my saddlebag is always the intuitive, instinctive, habitual, perpetual, never-ending awareness of what the hell I'm doing, you know. I don't judge it. I don't change it unless I want to, but I'm aware of it. And that's where I get a lot of humor, you know. So, anyway, in the mind, a thought happens to be a process. It's like a physical universe. It's a reflection of the physical universe. If you throw a rock, it has a starting point and an arch or an arc in its flight, and then it hits something or somewhere or whatever. And every thought is like that in the mind. Remember that amorphous, nebulous, amoeba-like, gelatinous orb of whatever gooey, invisible crap it is that we call consciousness, our mind. That is full of little thoughts that are acting like that inside your mind, inside everybody's mind. And what we want to do is clean out some of that static, because we have found out every thought has an effect. Every thought has an effect. Somewhere, sometime, there is no such thing as a benign thought, whether it's a loving thought or a pure thought. A pure thought is going to project, a loving thought is going to extend, but the effect will happen somewhere, even if it's only in another part of your own mind, or it's somebody's mind out there in the collective consciousness, right? So, we are little individual vortexes putting conscious thoughts into the collective mentality of the planet, the human race. And we have an obligation to our good neighbors to try to keep it clean. You know, Sid Silvage wrote a song, and we just keep it clean. So, but individually, to learn the ins and outs of what makes freedom outlaw mind state, we want to remember monitoring the thoughts and being free of beliefs so that our mind is not harboring or entertaining or perpetuating a certain thought structure that would prevent that area of the mind which holds that thought process and all related to it. That area is then locked down. It's not open. And we want open minds so we can see if we can get past our programming, our conditioning, our experiential knowledge, and all the content of the memory, so that we can be unencumbered to objectively view what is now. And to find out if we can do that, we first had to figure out where we have to start monitoring the content of the mind. Not doing anything about it, just being aware of it. Okay. The thought that we're concerned with is a thought that produces an effect. By producing an effect, which all thoughts do, by producing that effect, the thought is a cause, and the effect is the result of its causality. The cause creates the created. It has an effect. Without an effect, nothing is a cause. And without something causing it, nothing is an effect. And yet everything in the universe is cause and effect, interrelated. Life is moved through relationship and the interconnectedness of everything. So, cause and effect are never separate. They're never separated. You cannot have one without the other. We just showed it. No effect, then there wasn't a cause. If there's no cause, there wouldn't be an effect. It's no way to get around it. So, a belief is an empowerment of, it's an empowerment of either a thought or a thought system or a mental concept and a paradigm of sorts or whatever. Tradition carries on through this phenomenon in the psyche, generation after generation, throughout all time. That's how tradition carries on. And we don't want to get rid of tradition. What we want to do is understand it and be aware of it. Because if we're aware of it, then we're no longer bound to it. And if we're no longer bound to tradition, we're suddenly free in one aspect of our amorphous, big, gelatinous orb of invisible consciousness that's housing all these little different thoughts and ideas, or psychogenic flotsam, whatever. We can see that we're not bound to it. And that is a liberation. That's a freedom. That is a freedom that will give the awareness an empowerment to see more clearly, to see without the influence of conditioning and programming and repetition and habit and rejected memory and distortions of dream states and dream wish, whatever. All right. All of that is important to people who are trying to rein in an insane government that is spinning us into oblivion, that is fighting every other civilization around the face of the planet, with military bases in over 140 countries, with wars going on not declared by Congress, with a war on drugs going on unauthorized by its own founding legal charter here in the United States, with black marketing, with black budgeting, with secret national security intelligence apparatus, with NORTHCOM sitting there in Colorado to police the United States on U.S. soil, with and in conjunction with law enforcement, all merged together under Homeland Security's Fusion Center network. With all of that going on, and the other regulations, and the being in bed with the Wall Street cats who are sitting there on the board of the Federal Reserve System, which issues this nation's currency and debt. Shorty, do you know they just got the first audit of the Fed? According to Senator Sanders, from up in what, Vermont. I think he's Vermont. He started it a year ago after a bill that Ron Paul introduced. Got it passed through Congress to investigate the Federal Reserve. They investigated the first year's report of this investigation. Indicates, shows clearly, and he states it on a U.S. senator's website. You can go read this for yourself. The idiots at the Fed printed $16 trillion and gave it to their banker friends in Europe, Asia, the United States, and I think some in Africa. $16 trillion created out of thin air, nothing to back it, except the taxation of the American public. We are the ones holding the liability for the interest payments on $16 trillion that the bankers, central bank control center called the Federal Reserve, printed and then gave to themselves. That is on a U.S. senator's website for easy reading. By the time this mechanism has so intruded into every corner of our lives as free people, as free Americans, it's time for Freedom Outlaws to call it what it is, promote the perception of this, and then, you know, get on your horse, slap leather, and ride, man. What do you think, Shorty?
Well, I find it curious that Occupy Wall Street and all the Occupy events going on around the country are mad as heck at the bankers, but very few of them ever mention the Federal Reserve, and yet it is the Federal Reserve that has just forked over this money, this bribery, this theft to the bankers.
Yeah, I mean, you've got CEOs at Wall Street firms sitting on the board of the Federal Reserve, awarding themselves multi-billion-dollar gift packages, leaving the American public to pay for it. And this is blatant piracy.
It's outright theft.
All right, guys, last call. Sorry, we're
another night is over.
Oh, man. We were just getting going good, too. Dang it. Yeah, well, man, it sure is good to kick back with you for a little bit, Shorty. I don't know what we'll talk about next time, but let's get together again soon, have a few rounds, and see what pops up next.
That sounds good to me.
Barkeep, you better total us up there.
Thanks.
Thank you for everything.
Thank you.
And the band is really happening, and the Johnny Walker wisdom running high. And my very sweet companion, she's the angel of compassion. She's rubbing up the world against her thigh. And every drinker, every dancer lifts a happy face to thank her. The fiddler fiddles something so sublime. All the women tear their blouses off, and the men they dance on the polka dots. And his partner found, and his partner lost, and it's hell to pay when the fiddler stops. It's closing time.
Tower where the blessed hours chant.
swear it happened just like this. A sigh, cry, a hungry kiss. The gates of love, they buzz an inch. I can't say much has happened since, but closing time,
closing time, closing time, closing time.
I swear it happened just like this. A sigh, cry, a hungry kiss. The gates of love, they buzz an inch. I can't say much has happened since.
Can't say much has happened since.
But closing
time, closing time.
I loved you for your beauty, but that doesn't make a fool of me. You were in it for your beauty too. And I loved you for your body. There's a voice that sounds like God to me, declaring, declaring,
declaring,
declaring that your body's really you. I loved you when our love was blessed, and I loved you now. There's nothing left but sorrow and a sense of overtime. And I missed you since a place got wrecked, and I just don't care what happens next. Looks like freedom, but it feels like death. It's something in between. I guess it's closing time. Since our place got wrecked by the winds of change and the weeds of sex, and it looks like freedom, but it feels like death. It's something in between, I guess. It's closing time. Yeah, we're drinking and we're dancing, but there's nothing really happening, and the place is dead as heaven on a Saturday night. My very close companion gets me fumbling, gets me laughing. She's 100, but she's wearing something tight. And I lift my glass to the awful truth, which can't reveal to the ears of you, except to say it isn't worth a damn. And the whole damn place goes crazy twice, and it's once for the devil and it's once for Christ. By the boss thrown like these dizzy heights, we're busted in the blinding lights of closing time. The whole damn place goes crazy twice, and it's once for the devil and it's once for Christ. But the boss thrown like these dizzy heights, we're busted in the blinding lights. In the blinding lights of closing time, closing time. Oh, the women tear their blouses off, and the men they dance on the polka dots. It's closing time. And it's partly found, and it's partly lost, and it's hell to pay when the fiddler stops. It's closing. I swear it happened just like this. A sigh, cry, a hungry kiss. It's glowing.